This is the EAPA Podcast, conversations with leading global experts sharing insights and solutions on EAP-driven business transformation. With your host, Charles Epstein. Now, here's Charles.
Welcome to the EAPA Podcast. I'm Charles Epstein, your host. Today, I'm delighted to be joined by Teresa Kulikowski-Gillespie. Over the past year or so, we've spoken with a number of former Olympians about the relationship between mental health with elite performance. Teresa was an elite gymnast who was an alternate on the 1996 Olympic team and went on to have a very successful career competing at the collegiate level and winning the all-around NCAA title in 1999, along with two NCAA balance beam titles in 99 and 2001. She's since gone on to become a licensed physician assistant working in functional medicine at Kestrel Wellness and to become a certified mindfulness meditation teacher through the mindfulness meditation teacher certification training. And this past May, Teresa published a book entitled Beyond the Battlefield, Stories of Tenacity and Mindful Guidance Along the Warrior's Path, which I'm very eager to talk about. Teresa, welcome.
Thank you so much for having me.
And you are joining us today from Fort Leavenworth, Kansas, correct?
That's correct, yep.
Excellent. I'm down here in South Florida, and I just want to say thanks so much for taking the time to speak with us today. Really appreciate it, Teresa.
Yeah, thank you for having me.
My first question, what drew you to gymnastics?
Yeah, so my dad was in the Army, and we were stationed over in Germany, and I was 2.5 years old. My older sister was 4 at the time, and she was taking gymnastics there, and I kept running in on her classes. You had to be 3 in order to start, and I just kept running in, you know, time after time, like, you know, Teresa, come back, this is not for you. Right. And finally, they said, just let her go, you know. So I started gymnastics when I was 2.5 at a little club over in Germany on the military base, and the rest is history. I mean, it was just a natural thing for me. I can truly say it was my first love. I just did it all the time. I didn't want to do anything else other than gymnastics. I was naturally flexible. And yeah, so it was just like such a natural fit from the get-go.
Interesting. You know, mm-hmm. I've asked all the elite athletes, I think we've had about 5 now on the pod. I've asked all of them who've come on about the sacrifices they made from an early age to compete at the highest levels. And, you know, several said they never viewed it as a sacrifice. It was just something that was woven into what they did and, you know, who they were and exposed them to opportunities, took them to places they wouldn't have otherwise been. What's your take on that?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I would say I relate very much to what the other athletes were saying for the most part. I mean, as I said, as a little girl, it was really my first love, and it was all I ever wanted to do. I slept in my leotard. I wore my grips to bed, even though my hands were too small to actually wear grips on bars. And it was a punishment to not get to go to the gym. You know, if I wasn't at the gym, then I was playing at home doing gymnastics. So, like I would say the first several years, it was exactly what I wanted to do, and I didn't feel like I was giving anything up. Around the age of 10, I actually had my first bout of burnout. I had a coach who was trying to push me to go elite, and I wasn't quite ready to do that. And so I started developing a lot of mental blocks, a lot of fear. But even then, I wouldn't say I felt like I was sacrificing anything. It just felt like a struggle. But I kept wanting to go. I never thought about quitting. I quit that gym and I went to a different gym to kind of take a little bit of time off. But I still wanted to go. I mean, I wanted to go to the Olympics, and that was my goal. That was my dream, and nothing was going to stop me. Once I started training elite around the age of 13, my whole family had up and moved to Colorado Springs so I could do that. So talk about sacrifice for the family. It was a huge sacrifice because my sisters, I have an older sister and a younger sister, they had to leave their activities. Fortunately, they found things in Colorado Springs, but, you know, the family made a big sacrifice for my gymnastics. And then I homeschooled for a couple years, so I didn't go to normal high school. But again, that didn't feel like a sacrifice because I didn't want to go to regular high school. I was very much an introvert. I kept to myself and I just wanted to train. So I would say all throughout my time as an athlete, like even into college, I did it in college gymnastics, and I just felt honored to be able to do that. I would say now looking back, I'm 42, half of my life was as a gymnast and half now not as a gymnast. And I question, you know, was there a little bit of arrested development? I didn't get to go to school dances. I didn't get to date at the normal time. And this was just my experience as an athlete. I know sometimes athletes are able to balance both, but I didn't. So I sometimes do question, well, was that the healthiest thing? Because hindsight is somewhat 20/20, but during the time, I would say all in all, I did not feel like I was sacrificing a lot. I got to travel the world. I was 15 in Japan. I was 16 in France, 17 in Malaysia, getting to meet people from all around the world and seeing pretty amazing things. So,
well, you know, it's interesting. You talk about maybe in retrospect, there was some arrested development, but I'm thinking, you know, a lot of your world is with adults, coaches, judges, others, just around that whole culture, if you will. So mm-hmm. to some extent, you know, you can argue that there was some accelerated development there. No?
Yeah, that's very true. Right. And I guess sometimes if you miss those developmental milestones of dating and doing like the quote normal things, then as an adult thinking, oh, did I miss out on something?
Yeah.
Right. But you're right. There's always a trade-off. I think there's always a trade-off. Yeah. I definitely think that a lot of high-level athletes are mature beyond their years because of what we have to go through.
Yeah. You know, you sometimes see this with, you know, professional, even collegiate athletes now, you know, they're on TV and they're interviewed and, you know, they're very polished. Beyond your typical, you know, 19-year-old, 20-year-old, et cetera. So I think there's something to be said for that. You know, Teresa, in your LinkedIn bio, you state that your gymnastic successes, along with your Olympic disappointments, taught you a lot about true happiness, as this is something I and many of us are still trying to figure out. I'm eager to know what these experiences taught you about true happiness. Please share with us your secrets to true happiness.
Well, I definitely don't have it all figured out. For me, it's still like a daily exploration, but it's a journey. And I feel like when I missed the Olympic team, it was such a bittersweet moment. You know, I had worked 12 years of my life to get there, and I missed it by one spot. And so I was very sad. I was very disappointed. I went into my first bout of depression at 17 years old, and I didn't really know what was going on at the time.
I ask you a quick question. I'm sorry to interrupt, but sure, did you travel with the team? Where was the 96 Olympics?
No, they were in
LA. Where was that? No.
Where's 96? Atlanta.
Oh, that's right. Yeah. Richard Jewell. How do we forget? So you didn't travel with the team?
No, I didn't travel. Well, one, because they were in the States, and two, because that year, six people competed on each event, but seven actually made the team. So they somewhat had an inherent alternate already there, even though all seven of them were officially on the team and I was the first alternate. So it was kind of complicated. And I had actually made the team at trials. I was sixth of seven. But two athletes petitioned from a previous competition and it bumped me to eighth. It was just, I mean, bittersweet is the word that I use to describe it because I was so close yet couldn't go.
Of course.
I wanted to win the Olympics and they won gold that year. So I was watching that from home. Bawling my eyes out.
Didn't mean to take us back down this path. I was just curious.
No. Yeah.
You know, and it's going to be a long way from there to get us back to this happiness question. Yes.
Well, so, but what I learned, I think, through that, it was a very hard time. And if I would have made the Olympic team, I wouldn't have had the college gymnastics experiences. Mm. And so I think it goes back to that whole piece of trusting the journey of our life, and that sometimes when we're in the thick of these very deep struggles, we feel like we're never going to get out of it. You know, what's all this for? And then we get some light shed on it, and it really feels like, oh, this did serve a greater purpose for me in my life. So I think that was one piece is just learning to trust the process of life. And through that trust, there's some ease. And with ease, there's more joy. There's the capacity to experience happiness. So that was part of it. And then I think also remembering that accomplishing things doesn't bring us ultimate happiness. I accomplished a lot in my gymnastics career, and yet I still struggled with depression and poor self-image and not feeling like I'm enough. And so constantly seeking that happiness externally is fruitless. So to me, after having a very successful gymnastics career and then falling into depression, it was like, well, obviously this is not the path to true happiness. It's got to be that inward journey, an inner sense of being that is enough and whole. So, you know, to me, there's a difference between showing up in the world and thinking, I'm not enough. I need to accomplish this. I need to do this in order to fill this void within myself of not being enough, versus doing that inner work, realizing, oh, I'm whole just as I am. I'm enough just as I am. And can I show up in the world with a full cup, so to speak, and give that to others? So, you know, that's kind of been my shift as an adult, especially being sick. And we'll talk about that a little bit later. But can I be okay with myself as I am, not having to accomplish and do all the time, but just through my being, that's enough.
As I mentioned, you know, in the intro, we've spoken with several elite athletes about the connection between elite performance and mental health, and you started to sort of touch on that. The experience of not making the team, being an alternate, you said was a bittersweet experience. And then you started figuring things out, saying to yourself, well, what you just said, that, you know, accomplishment is not the end all and be all for my self-esteem. And I was accomplishing things and I was still suffering from bouts of depression. At what point, you know, did you really start sorting that out and get this perspective? That's the first part of the question. And, you know, this is 1996 that, you know, the 96 Olympics. You know, obviously in recent years, there's been a lot more transparency, a lot more prominent athletes, some gymnastic, most recently Simone Biles. You know, they've been very forthcoming about their mental health issues. I'm assuming, you know, there was none of that conversation, let alone any of that support when you were coming up. But the first question, you know, when did you start getting perspective?
Well, it was a process. I feel like my freshman year of college was a really incredible year for me. And for whatever reason, I felt very confident in myself. And we had a great sports psychologist. I had good coaches. It was the first time I was really on a team. So I think that connection with other athletes was really important for my own health and well-being. And I won NCAAs that year, and I won balance beam. So I had a glimpse of peace and balance in my being at that time. And then the stress kind of built again and the expectation built again. So I struggled my sophomore year. So it was this it's a journey. It's up and down. You know, we have moments where we feel more centered and balanced, and then we have moments where we don't. But I would say my junior year of college was a really tough one. And I read a book called The Art of Happiness by the Dalai Lama. And that started planting these seeds of the practices of meditation and mindfulness and reconnecting with myself, free of judgment, free of all the external expectations. So I definitely didn't master it at that point, but it was like planting the seeds. And so throughout my college career, I did a lot of visualization. I did a lot of, you know, affirmation and relaxation. So using my mind as a tool to improve my performance and also my well-being. And then it wasn't until after I was done with college gymnastics that I was really delving into these practices of meditation and mindfulness. And those to me have been life-changing.
Yeah. Very, very interesting. And again, it's, interesting, as I mentioned, back in the day when, you know, you were competing at the elite level, also in college, you know, they did not have the resources and the attention was not paid on the mental health side of things, I'm sure, certainly like it is today.
Yeah, you know, we did have on the national team, they were starting to do a wellness team, and we had a sports psychologist, we had a nutritionist. So it was there. And then in college, we had a sports psychologist and a nutritionist, and we definitely worked on the performance side of things. But the, you know, the depression and the disordered eating, and I don't think that was as much in the public eye as it is now.
But given the environment and given the culture where it's all about competing and it's all about results and it's all about sucking it up and it's all about having to some extent sort of a warrior mentality, you know, so I would think some of that sort of rubs up against, even if the support, the, you know, psychological support is well-meaning and freely offered, it may not have been as freely accepted or taken.
Yeah. Like, you mean by the athletes, not accepted?
By the athletes, yes.
Yeah, I think that's true. That I think there's a particular type of personality that is drawn and excels in high-level athletics. And so there's like already a predisposition towards wanting to kind of be independent and know that you can do it all and not ask for help if it's not needed. So, yeah, I mean, I guess I can see that a lot of people probably didn't seek the help or didn't utilize the resources that were there.
Yeah.
Out of fear for coming across as, oh, that means I don't have my stuff together. That means right. I'm not at the top of my game. So, yeah, I mean, I can definitely.
Yeah. You know, because, yeah, I mean, even outside of that world in the corporate space and in different cultures, is, you know, with mental health support, there's always been a stigma that attaches to it. So I'm thinking that stigma is perhaps even greater in the world of elite athletics. And obviously that has come down, you know, with Michael Phelps and again, Simone Biles and others being really bold and courageous and speaking about their personal troubles in a very transparent personal way. So. Tell us about your book, Beyond the Battlefield, Stories of Tenacity and Mindful Guidance Along the Warrior's Path. What experiences did you draw on to write it?
Yeah, that was, I mean, I guess I can give a little bit more of my background because after I finished gymnastics, I went to PA school, physician assistant at the University of Utah. And then I worked a couple of years as a civilian PA and then joined the Army. So the Army was in my family. I mentioned my dad was in, my sister was in, and they were paying off my graduate degree. And I was at a point where I was like, I just want to do something that feels more fulfilling. So I joined the Army and I deployed to Iraq for a year as the battalion physician assistant and had a pretty cool 3 years in the Army. And then when I got out, I started getting sick. And so long story short, I've been dealing with some chronic illness for about 10 years and having so much time at home, having to quit my job outside of the home, I started creating online courses, just trying to do things that I could do from home. And I started an online course for gymnasts, for retiring gymnasts called Who Am I Now? The Transition to Life After Sport. And I wasn't getting a lot of leverage on it, so I sent it to my former battalion XO, the executive officer of my unit. And he had just gotten out of the Army, and he said, well, I think there might be a place for this within the military and veteran community. And so I started thinking about, well, how could I morph this into something that's for the military? And it was just a very organic process where I started interviewing people and hearing their stories. I loved hearing their stories. And so I turned it all into a book. So the military experiences, I'm a mindfulness meditation teacher. So I pulled it all together into this book where I tell a story. I highlight the challenges of depression, anxiety, PTSD, you know, things that happen from being in a high-stress military situation. And then how can we make these tools of mindfulness and meditation more accessible within a culture that might kind of poo-poo it a little bit, you know, think that, oh, this is for sissies or this is just like woo-woo stuff. So I'm really trying to debunk myths around it by bringing in brain science. Like there's brain science behind how meditation and mindfulness help to heal from these very intense experiences that many military service members go through.
Yeah,
so very interesting. So I would say every experience in my life, being a gymnast, being a PA, being in the Army, and being a mindfulness teacher are, you know, they come together in this book.
Yeah, for sure. What are some of the things you hope readers take away from it?
Yeah, I mean, first and foremost, I hope to raise awareness around what military members go through. I think there's a lot of misunderstandings around, oh, if you're in the military, you're a natural born killer kind of a thing. And no, I mean, so many people in the military are incredible human beings and they're put in highly stressful and difficult situations. So trying to raise awareness around that. I hope that military and veterans can read the stories and connect, because I know myself as a reader, if I read a book and I'm struggling with something and I see, oh, somebody else is going through that, I don't feel so alone in it. And so right. I'm hoping to create connection for people going through similar situations. And then finally, you know, obviously bringing to light these tools of meditation and mindfulness and the benefit of them.
Yeah. You know, what I think is particularly interesting is you come out of two experiences and two cultures, the gymnast culture, which is, say, elite performance, and military, where you'd have to imagine being open about these issues. There's a real big struggle, a real big stigma. And, you know, I think people who not had those experiences could read your book and come away with, you know what, if these people, you know, or who typically labor under that stigma or bold enough to come out and publicly speak to it, I can too. So that's a real valuable service.
Exactly. Exactly. That's really, really what I'm hoping. And I understand too. So my husband was deployed to Afghanistan. He's actually in the movie Restrepo. That was his unit. And he, you know, he's read the book, but he said he really has to pace himself. So I have to be mindful of that too, that people who have had these traumatic experiences may need to read the stories very slowly as they might be somewhat triggering, which is something that I didn't think of going into it. But
yeah. But
all in all, he also said, wow, you know, this just gives me, I know some of these people and I didn't know that they were going through that. So I think it does create a deeper connection on like a very human to human level.
Yeah. Yeah. No, it's great stuff. Any plans on writing another one?
I do. Yeah. I was hoping to do a similar process with high level gymnasts. So interviewing, and I've started the interview process, but I started the interviews, then my book came out and I'm kind of like in a middle zone here. But I do have some interviews done and I'm hoping to do a similar thing for gymnasts.
Oh, okay, good. No, I think that could also resonate. Again, that would be, you know, great at opposite ends of the bookshelf, you know, coming at the same issue from, you know, different angles, different perspectives. But anyway, Teresa, this is a really interesting, timely conversation. The book is terrific. I wish you great success with it.
Thank you so much.
Today we spoke with Teresa Kulikowski Gillespie, former elite gymnast, mindfulness trainer, and author of the recently published book entitled Beyond the Battlefield, Stories of Tenacity and Mindful Guidance Along the Warrior's Path. She joined us today from Leavenworth, Kansas. This is Charles Epstein for the EAPA podcast. Thanks so much for joining us. See you next time.
This has been the EAPA podcast, conversations with leading global experts sharing insights and solutions on EAP-driven business transformation. Produced by EAPA, the global leader in employee assistance, accreditation, support, development, and networking of employee assistance professionals.